We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. I don't know if I'd call it entertaining. It certainly is interesting. And it's a never-ending font of news stories. The presidential campaign this year is just that. It's not boring, that's for sure. It was just yesterday morning that the leader of the FBI announced that after an investigation of candidate Hillary Clinton's email scandal, he would not recommend an indictment against her, although he made it pretty clear that she'd broken the law in question. We're going to be talking about that and the rest of this, the issues surrounding the November elections in our weekly update with Mark and Molly Hemingway. Mark Hemingway is our guest. He's senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having us.
And Molly Hemingway is senior editor for The Federalist. Molly, welcome.
Great to be here with you.
Okay, Mark, what is the impact of yesterday's announcement that the FBI head is not going to recommend an indictment against Hillary Clinton?
Well, it's hard to tell exactly what the impact on the race is. I mean, you know, in legal terms, you know, obviously it's a huge deal. It seems like it's nearly impossible now that the Justice Department is going to recommend or, you know, or pursue charges against Hillary Clinton. So, we don't know what the effect that's going to have on the race, to what extent that will satisfy the fact that there's going to be no charges. Will that satisfy voters? You know, we don't really know. One thing I think is really interesting, which is to say that, you know, as you kind of pointed out, Comey yesterday, well, he did announce that the FBI's recommendation was not to pursue charges. That was only after rather dramatically and systematically dismantling every excuse and lie that Hillary Clinton had offered, such that, you know, it's going to be very hard for her and her surrogates to defend her conduct, you know, on the campaign if it becomes an issue. Further, the Obama administration, the way they handled this is it's just really kind of baffling. They made absolutely no effort to make this look like it has the patina of legitimacy. You know, Obama came out and endorsed Hillary Clinton, of course, setting up an automatic conflict of interest. If ever a situation cried out for a special prosecutor, this was it. Nobody appointed a special prosecutor. There was no clamor in the press about this conflict of interest. And then a few days ago, after Loretta Lynch, the attorney general, has both privately met with Bill Clinton, and Hillary Clinton has floated the idea publicly of keeping her on in the next administration, says that she'll accept the administration's she'll accept the FBI's recommendation for charges, and, you know, here we are. It really stinks to high heaven. And the announcement came just a few hours before Obama was to begin campaigning with Hillary for the first time. So, I mean, it really just, the timing and the optics, it just look really, really bad. So it's going to be very hard for them to justify all this and just sweep it under the rug as the campaign goes on.
Molly, I want your thoughts as well, and especially you've been thinking a little bit about the media reaction to it, how the media has kind of come to grips with the fact that candidate Clinton has not been telling the truth.
As far as the electoral consequences, I think it was a huge gift to the Donald Trump campaign that Comey did not indict. I mean, frankly, it would have been a gift if he had recommended that there be an indictment. But Donald Trump's campaign is sending this message that everything in D.C. is broken, that people who are elite get to play by one set of rules, and that this is harming normal people. And yet again, a Clinton has been allowed to skate when having done something that would have put any of the rest of us in jail or in serious legal trouble for a very long time. And so I think that a lot of people are frustrated with this, even if they don't share a particular political persuasion, and they are just sick to death of what's happening in Washington, D.C. So I think electorally this does help the Donald Trump campaign. As far as the media coverage, that's another interesting thing, in that the media, I think Hillary's campaign is, they have a tagline that says, "I'm with her." And I think that best describes our media, "I'm with her." They all seem to be with her, and they all seem to be very supportive of her. And they really downplayed this email scandal for a good year and a half, I mean, even when it came out, it was aware at the it was obvious at the very beginning of what a serious issue this was, and the media kind of poo-pooed it and treated it like it was something that was no big deal. And then once the FBI director came out hard against everything that Clinton was doing and saying that anybody who was reasonable would have known this was bad, that all the indications are that hostile foreign agents gained access to this confidential information, that contrary to what Hillary Clinton said about how she never sent or received classified information, that she did so 110 times, and in some cases at the highest levels of confidentiality. And then the media finally admit, oh, it was, I guess, a big scandal. The best example of this is that the Washington Post once gave Carly Fiorina 4 Pinocchios, which is their metric for determining whether someone's telling the truth or not. You get a Pinocchio if you're not being truthful. They gave Carly Fiorina 4 Pinocchios for saying things that were literally true. I mean, it just made no, she should have gotten 0 Pinocchio. She got 4 for saying stuff like she once was a secretary and then she became a CEO. They gave that 4 Pinocchios because she had some steps along the way in between. Now, Hillary Clinton, whose very first and only press conference on the email scandal was riddled with obvious lies, they gave her 2 Pinocchios on that. They upgraded it after the FBI director's announcement to 4 Pinocchios, now that it doesn't matter at all. And that's a really good example of how the media coverage has been along the way.
I just wanted to add one thing about the electoral consequences, which is that this is a gift for congressional Republicans that are running for re-election, that is a huge thing and a huge silver lining for Republicans there. Republicans, with Donald Trump at the top of the ticket, he'd been performing so poorly in national polls and still is, that there was a lot of concern that if Trump, lost by, 8, 9, 10 points, then Republicans would lose their historically large House majority, and all these other, devastating consequences, because Trump wasn't turning out people at the top of the polls. Well, then now with Hillary's transgressions becoming much clearer in the voters' minds, they can run really hard against Hillary Clinton, and that will mitigate sort of the Trump albatross around their neck, because they can just point to Hillary Clinton and say, "What, your guy is any better?" With all of the scandal that she's mired in. So it really is gives Republicans a hope for retaining at least one of their majorities in Congress.
Speaking of the polls, you mentioned them, Mark. I wonder, Molly, the majority of the national polls today show Clinton up over Trump by single digits, from 6 to 2, somewhere in that neighborhood, only one of them showing Donald Trump leading Hillary Clinton. What do the polls tell us, if anything, at this point?
Well, that they are so close indicates that people in both parties or people who are inclined to vote either Democratic or Republican are deeply dissatisfied with their options. And it is interesting that, Trump is going to have to fight. I think I just saw today that Utah is not rated solid Republican anymore. So he's going to have to fight in states that he should have had locked up just by virtue of being a Republican. But this late in the game, heading into conventions, people are extremely dissatisfied. The Wall Street Journal just had a story out where they quote a Trump-supportive RNC member as saying that Trump still doesn't have the nomination locked up or giving numbers that indicate that Trump does not have the nomination locked up at convention, that he has 800 and some delegates. There are 600 and some that are solidly anti-Trump, and something like 900 are still in play. Trump has really done a bad job of indicating to voters who are not already on board and donors that he can actually win this election. And that's the polls showing that people are still very nervous about having him at the top of the ticket. So he really needs to, just to preserve his own place at the top of the ticket. But if he wants to have any hope at all of winning, he needs to start campaigning much more seriously than he has in the last few months. He did just come out with numbers indicating that his June fundraising totals were close to $50 million, which is much better than what they were in May. He actually included a bit of May in those totals. But they were still less than half of what Mitt Romney did at that same period of time in 2012. So he's still got a long way to go.
And money aside, there's still no real indication that Donald Trump has a campaign organization or is running any sort of conventional campaign or doing the steps you need to do to win the presidency. One of the most staggering stats I've seen, you know, in my career recently was, you know, Hillary Clinton has run 20,000 ads since July 8th, running for president. June 8th. I'm sorry. And Donald Trump has run zero ads. I mean, I don't know how on earth you run a campaign when you're not running ads and you don't have a staff in states and all of the things that you know you normally do. And Donald Trump doesn't seem to have any satisfactory answers for why that is, why he hasn't done these things.
And yet both of these candidates, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, are of necessity talking about potential running mates. I think Hillary Clinton has promised a short list of five by the time they get to the DNC. For both of you, beginning with you, Molly, if you were advising both of these candidates about a running mate, who would you choose and why?
Well, the latest news for Donald Trump was that one of the candidates that he, one of the people he was considering for his VP slot, took himself out of the running in an interview with the Washington Post. That was Senator Bob Corker of Tennessee, who had been Trump supportive up until this point and is still Trump supportive but has no interest in being vice president. And so Trump has a difficult situation. Normally, if you are the Republican nominee, you getting to offer someone the VP slot is much easier than it is in Trump's case, where it could be you know, it either works out really well for someone or it could be the end of their career. I, back in March, started thinking about who would be good vice presidential candidates. And at the top of my list at that time was Newt Gingrich, who is someone who shares a lot of Trump's sensibilities and ability to play hardball with the media, but also has a true conservative outlook. He's smart, he's principled, and he knows how to get things done in Washington. So I think what you'll see with Trump is that if he gets his way, he'll get someone like that, or he'll get someone who is just a true outsider to politics, someone like a military general. In fact, Trump said quite recently that he had 10 people he was looking at, and two of them were retired U.S. generals. And that would actually probably also be a very good move for him.
And Hillary, very quickly?
As for Hillary Clinton, she has a difficulty in the same way that she lacks the enthusiasm of a lot of the she doesn't bring a lot of enthusiasm, and so she'll probably be trying to find someone who can make people more excited about voting for her, and also have some thought that there is a hope for progressive change. I think it's not surprising that she's been looking at Elizabeth Warren, the progressive senator from Massachusetts, or perhaps someone who brings a youth to the ticket that is not shared by either her or her opponent in Donald Trump. So Sanchez from Texas or someone like this Castro from Texas might be helpful. But Mark might have some thoughts on there, too.
Yeah, same question for you, Mark. If you're advising both these candidates, what veeps are you recommending?
Well, that is a really good question. I think Molly pretty well covered the bases with Trump. I think that, honestly, looking at the people who are national figures that could run with Trump and give him the sort of air of authority and sort of credence he needs with voters, I mean, Newt Gingrich is about it in terms of somebody who actually seems interested in the job and would, you know, actually appeal to people who aren't already Trump supporters. As for Hillary Clinton, this is a bit tricky. She's got to worry about locking down her progressive base, and I don't know that would. At the same time, I don't know putting a figure that's really popular progressives like Elizabeth Warren on the ticket would necessarily help her, because you know, she still has to win independents. You know, maybe Trump will be performing so poorly that maybe she feels like she can, you know, take the risk. You know, if in terms of, you know, conventional wisdom, in terms of the idea you're going to have to run in 4 years probably on the same ticket in a much more competitive landscape, you'd have to be, you know, really wary of somebody like Elizabeth Warren, who I I think would turn off a lot of people for the same reasons that Hillary Clinton turns off people, and wouldn't exactly mitigate any of the things that people don't like about, you know, Hillary Clinton, and if anything, because she's less centrist, might be even, you know, more off-putting to the moderates that Hillary Clinton wants to appeal to. So I think that she needs to find somebody sort of young and fresh-faced within the Democratic Party to help her out, somebody that also I think is in a more, and some, but at the same time has, you know, some progressive bona fides in a way that she doesn't. And that's a really tall order, because Democrats got completely wiped out in the last two midterm elections at the state and local level. I'm just devastated. And Republicans, despite Donald Trump making a mess of things, you know, at the state and local level, Republicans are doing, you know, better than they have, I think, since, you know, the end of World War II, at least. There aren't a lot of young Democratic office holders. You know, they, Julian Castro, the mayor of San Antonio, they promoted him to Housing and Urban Development Secretary. There was a lot of speculation at the time for no other reason than to give him a national profile so he could at least be considered as a vice presidential ticket, because he was never going to win statewide office, kind of hailing from Texas. So, I mean, Democrats are really desperate to get new blood into the national political scene right now. So it's a really tricky thing for Hillary, and I'll be, you know, darned if I have any great ideas for her.
When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about who isn't planning to go to the Republican National Convention, among them George W. Bush, Lindsey Graham, and John McCain, and who will be speaking there. Usually the tradition is that kind of the losers behind the front runner get a chance to address the convention. We will find out if that will be the case at either convention. Mark and Molly Hemingway are our guests. Mark is senior writer for the Weekly Standard, and Molly is senior editor for The Federalist. We're getting our weekly update on the November elections. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Gloria Christi Lutheran, Greeley, Colorado; St. John's Lutheran, Rosemount, Minnesota; Trinity Lutheran, Waltham, Minnesota; Trinity Lutheran, Fredericktown, Missouri; Zion Lutheran, Gravelton, Missouri; Christ the King Lutheran, Billings, Montana; Redeemer Lutheran, Nashville, Tennessee; and Zion Lutheran, Douglas, Wyoming. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you dread going to work out?
Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're getting our weekly update on the November elections with Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard and Molly Hemingway of The Federalist. Molly, let's talk a little bit about the Republican National Convention. Saw something today, a list of prominent Republicans who would not be coming. Why are people like George W. Bush and his dad, Lindsey Graham, John McCain, why are they planning at least at this point to sit out the Republican National Convention?
Well, it is going to be a convention that is mostly known for nominating Donald Trump, unless there's something quite to the contrary, that happens, and that is a renunciation of a legacy of Republican leaders that is quite pronounced. And so, I think it's understandable that some candidates would, or some politicians would, want nothing to do it to do with it. It is highly unusual to not have the previous president of the party who was in your party not speaking at the convention. I think it's also true that, though, that a lot of people are going to want to speak at the convention. And Reince Priebus, the RNC head, said that all convention slots are already spoken for. And it is a good way for a lot of people to get a national profile and to introduce themselves to the party. And so I don't think their absence is going to matter that much. It's a very controversial time for the Republican Party, and it's sort of a battle for the soul of the party. Some people think that you need to support the candidate literally no matter who the candidate is, and other people think that it's time to stand strong on certain principles or values that Republicans have traditionally held. But there is there's a part of the debate that I don't think has actually been covered well, and there are a lot of candidates who are fine with Donald Trump, and they're happy to speak, and they're, you know, politicians who don't really have a big problem with Donald Trump. And a lot of attention is paid to those people who are mortified by Trump. But I think that a lot of people are missing out, therefore, on the people who have kind of made their peace with Trump.
Mark, typically those who ran against the nominee become keynote speakers at the convention, kind of a way of showing party unity. It's doubtful that Cruz Casich Rubio will be speaking there. Who do you expect to speak on behalf of Trump and the party there at the Republican National Convention?
Well, that's a good question. People are still trying to figure that out. I will note that I believe that Scott Walker just announced that he would be speaking at the convention. So that's, you know, one big Republican name that will, you know, then that will help Trump. The other thing, though, is that I think that the Republican Party, among the Republicans, there's a lot of people that are maybe running for office that are looking for opportunities to speak and get more national exposure. You know, if they don't already hold offices, probably a lot of people clamoring for those spots. I saw recently that Daryl Glenn, who's the black Republican who just won the primary in the Senate race out in Colorado, is a pretty exciting, you know, fresh face out in Colorado, and just endorsed Trump. And he's, you know, he would be like a perfect candidate, for instance, to, you know, speak at the convention, you know, to find sort of rising stars and put people out there and say, hey, you know, this is the face of the GOP that's, you know, that's coming up. And, you know, that might not be an entirely bad thing because regardless of whether Rubio speaks at the convention or Cruz speaks at the convention, there will be a lot of eyes peeled at this convention because people are either expecting some sort of behind-the-scenes drama and or Trump just, you know, has a way of attracting attention. So, I think it would be smart for people who need the exposure to take advantage of it.
Molly, does Bernie Sanders, if he speaks at the Democratic National Convention, does he steal the show from Hillary Clinton?
No, I went to this 4th of Independence Day parade in Georgetown, Colorado, and there was a team of Democrats that all marched in the parade, and not a single one was carrying a Hillary Clinton sign, except for one that said something like, "I used to be with Bernie, and now I am with Hillary." Now, Bernie Sanders undoubtedly will steal the show at any place where he appears to speak because, God bless him, he manages to make people really excited and interested in his message. But it would be far worse for Hillary Clinton not to have him speak at the convention and not to have him help unify the party behind her. If he can enthusiastically endorse and support Hillary and show his followers why she is the best candidate for them, that will be a very powerful thing. So I'm sure Team Clinton is doing everything in their power to make that possible.
Does Bill Clinton speak at the Democratic National Convention?
There's no way that Bill Clinton would not take up an opportunity to speak at the convention. Although he has this weird habit of sabotaging his wife when he does speak. So maybe the Clinton campaign wants to keep him as far away as possible. But I'm sure he'll play a role. I'm sure it'll be prominent. They might just keep him tightly scripted. I always think of that convention he spoke at where he droned on and on for like an hour on what was supposed to be a small speech. And he still can't help himself when he should be helping out his wife. But I think he'd have to be having a prominent role, not just as a beloved former president from the point of view of the Democrats who are gathered, but again, as an endorsement for Hillary and a way to mitigate some fears that she has all of his corruption problems with none of the charm. So the more that she can make it seem like he'll be involved in her administration. That works out very well for her.
Mark, a quick final question for you. You have written recently about that Texas state law that the Supreme Court knocked down last week. What are your thoughts with about a minute?
Is this the abortion thing?
Yes.
Yeah, well, so this is really interesting because Roe v. Wade originally, I believe the logic in the decision was that abortion had to be legalized to, quote, ensure the maximum safety of the patient. If you look at what the Texas law was, it was exactly that. With simple things like, the surgeons at the abortion clinics needed to have hospital admitting privileges and need to have hallways wide enough to get gurneys through in case there was emergencies. And there have been a number of high-profile cases in recent years involving, women who died at abortion clinics and other horrible things happening, to say nothing of the Kermit Gosnell stuff and the lack of adequate regulation in that regard. So, on one level, what Texas did was very common sense, and yet, despite this, somehow the court, once again ruled that abortion was some, sacred right, specifically enumerated somewhere, and to the point where they said that these regulations, were too burdensome. The liberal majority of this Supreme Court has never, had problems with regulatory burdens on businesses, except when it comes to abortion. So it's really, really baffling that they would arrive at that logic, and it just really speaks to how partisan and how abortion just completely transcends rule of law for, a liberal America. Because it's just completely unjustifiable.
You can read Mark Hemingway's and Molly Hemingway's columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Mark Hemingway is senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And Molly Hemingway is senior editor for The Federalist. Molly, thank you.
Great to be here with you.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to talk with Terry Mattingly about media coverage of the faith of the late Pat Summitt, the winningest coach in Division College basketball. We'll also find Christ in Psalm 41 with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening. Talk with you tomorrow on Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Hi, this is Pastor Clayton from Zion Lutheran Church of Muscoota, Illinois, a proud supporter of Issues Etc. Zion is a congregation firmly grounded in God's grace given in the Word and Sacraments, where we treasure the timeless beauty of the liturgy. Zion is also a vibrant, young, family-friendly congregation where you would be warmly welcomed. Zion is located at 101 South Railway Street in Muscoota, Illinois, and we would love to share God's gifts of grace with you. For more information, please visit our website at zionmuscoota.com.